that's good.
$1,300.
I love that.
I don't know.
Yeah, she was, and she was not happy.
No, well, I had her walk away from the bar, she'd be like, no, yeah.
They got moving.
My friend in there.
Joe, would know, did Bounder sell off the boat?
Huh?
Did Bounder sell the boat?
I haven't been here for 24 days, so I don't know.
That's no damn excuse, yeah.
He could've.
Okay.
I see the for sale sign still on it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, what do we got here?
You have any next meeting before it's a whole lot?
It's warm today.
Starting to warm back on?
No, we had to go for a walk in the heat.
Yeah.
Air conditioning in this building?
It's always open.
Air conditioning or?
I only know what a heater is.
It's natural.
Warm work with all your hot air.
It's all that heat.
Very few that have air conditioner.
That's a dream.
Not on here even now. You'd be like. No surprise here.
I can pull in here, just right.
You guys.
You're having a hot flash.
What are you guys, a lion in the shirt?
I think I gotta be like.
You get back in order?
Not yet.
Now.
He's gotta do it right off that.
There it is, and there it is.
30 seconds.
What is it?
Duckless.
Duckless one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In this back room right here, and I've thought about telling him to pipe it into here.
Good, it was any good over there.
That's where.
The main bridge there to keep all their servers.
Oh, yeah, that's right, that's where servers used to be, so they had it back there to keep it cool, and it might not be.
I was gonna say, that doesn't make any sense to me.
No, it was, there's a reason, it would, it'd be like 150 degrees back there if you didn't have it air conditioned.
Go down. So if you want it hot or cold in here, you have to tell me the day before what temperature you want.
Eventually get up there.
Well, we need your notice.
I was pretty surprised what that stuff cost, I just had a heat pump put in on Monday.
Yeah, they're not cheap.
For a trailer, almost $15,000.
Holy cow.
My friend in Reno just locked his furnace, it's 23 years old, it cracked. So they're looking at an estimate of $27,000 to replace the furnace and force there, natural gas.
For a ductless?
Not looking at a ductless single heart?
No, it's not ductless.
Oh, it's not, okay.
No, it's a heat pump.
Oh.
We got a heat pump.
But that explains why Amber's cost $500,000.
Our dog had that one lately.
Yeah.
Okay, we will come back in the second. We're reviewing Commissioner vacancy item A, we have the tallies done. The top tally is for Dan Frazier.
Yep.
So do we need to vote on that, Travis?
I think it would probably, yes, sorry, and Ashley. Right there, on the bottom of action item A.
Motion.
Recommended motion.
Recommended motion. Motion to approve Dan Frazier for Port of Brookings Harbor Board of Commissioner, position number 5, term ending on June 30th, 2025.
Hallelujah.
Okay, we have a motion in a second, Danielle.
Joe, Larry?
Yep.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yeah. Okay, so the process we'll follow now, Dan, is that you need to, either after the meeting or tomorrow, go get sworn in.
And that's at our front office.
Your front office?
Lisa's the notary, and she'll take care of that.
And then I suggest you make an appointment with Travis and staff and just sit down and let them give you the handbook and go over all that stuff.
Sounds fine.
All right, okay. And again, I want to make sure and thank everybody that applied. I'm glad we have some applicants and some interest. Okay, that moves us to item B, approved signature bank account, signature for bank account.
We're going to table this until the next meeting. We'll get Dan sworn in, get him everything, and then we'll approve him on the bank accounts.
Okay, all right. So that one's tabled. Item C, park host agreement.
So currently right now we have one park host, Steve. He's been there for a long time. He does a great job. But I think it's time that we get him a little bit of help so he's not responsible for it all the time. So first we needed to update our park host agreement. So council reviewed this, gave us a few changes. So updating this, and then we are starting to search to find one more camp host. Something to start about 6 months after this, which will stagger our current camp host and our new camp host every 6 months. So we're going to try and get back to the habit of every 6 months or every year for the camp host, soliciting and at least seeing if there's anybody else out there. So with that being said, this is the revised park host agreement, so we can start retaining another park host. And the park host, we're going to ask for them 3 days on, 3 days off, and then nobody's confined to always doing a weekend or during the week. It just sets them up to where they can help each other back and forth.
So this is a volunteer position. There's no compensation other than their site.
Correct.
And the utilities that go with the site.
Yep.
And is there interest in that?
We had so far we've gotten 5 applications, none that are available until next year. So we're still black and white.
One of our learning curves were that when we're finding park hosts, people that do that are set up, you know, they plan out 6 months to a year, and they're always looking for a year to a year and a half out. Right. So we're a little bit behind the curve on this, so that's why we're setting one out to find one in 6 months to come in, and hopefully it broadens our applicants that we can pick from.
The reason I ask is because there are several campgrounds in Central Oregon that are closed this year because they don't have a park host.
Right.
There's 2 Forest Service Visitor Centers that are closed because there's nobody volunteering to take those, and that shocked me.
Yeah, for camp hosts, you know, there's, they have their own campers website, you know, for that, and I know we've used it in the past, and for us, we've always had pretty good success with it. We do have a great park for people to, if you're in the camp host, to come do it. It's a great park to do it, but yeah, so far we've been pretty successful with it, so.
Okay, any further on park host agreement?
I make a motion to approve the draft beachfront RV park host agreement.
Second. Okay, we have a motion and a second, Danielle.
Larry?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. That brings us to action item D. Audit engagement letter.
Okay. Report audits must be reviewed by a certified public accountant and approved by the board. Completed audits must be sent to the state of Oregon by December 31st of every year. The port solicited for CPAs and received only one response. Attached is an engagement letter from Connie Huntsman. She's quite a few years now has been doing ours. We didn't get any other applicants, so I'm encouraged to accept this one.
Given our track record in her history, it'd be crazy not to stay with her. I think she does a great job, but a little intimidating. I don't want to say that because she's a really nice lady, but when she's talking to you about the audit, kind of going, oh.
She's very good.
Get to the bottom line where you say it's okay. all right. So.
I make a motion to accept CJ Huntsman audit our engagement letter for the year, fiscal year 2022-2023 services.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and second, Danielle.
Larry?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Delinquent account write-off.
Okay, so there's two of them. One is for $1,614.63, which is unpaid mortgage. And then the other one is for $3,105 for unpaid transit aid. I think one fuel ticket. So we're asking to write these off and submit them to court collections. Both these boats are gone. And will not be accepted back at the port.
The second one is a mistake.
The first is the reality that we've had troubles with for years, and the second is the mistakes that we've also had troubles with, but they are both gone.
Well, the reason I'm reacting to the mistakes is it seems to me we went above and beyond trying to accommodate that boat and that guy, the both people that were involved. And to end up with it in collections was just kind of, I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but I understand I'm disappointed, but it also kind of affirms my resolve in the future that we would say or we're going to take action quick.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can extend these things and do our best to meet people's desires and needs and problems, but there is a limit, and we're seeing that sometimes we don't get the return we would hope. So.
Question? If those boats go to another port, do they have to disclose any of what happened here, or would that, does that port have any reason to contact us?
So they don't have to disclose it, no different than if you owed Fred Meyer money and went to North Raleigh. But we have in the past had ports reach out to us and ask if we know of this boat or of this person, in which case we will disclose if we've had delinquency or other trouble with those boats or boat owners. Generally, it's if they call us because we don't know where they're going,
right,
and they may be
right
here. So.
No, I was just wondering, a lot of times, you know, depending on the situation, somebody will they'll contact
you. It does
you,
happen.
Yeah. But they're not required to, especially if there's a lien, goes to collection, there's a lien on it. You would think they, anyway. Okay.
Filters to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're at action time.
Okay. Recommended motion. Motion to approve the Leewood account write-off of $4,719.80 from accounts receivable and submit the amount to fourth collection agency.
Second. Just to be clear, so that everybody understands, we're not just washing our hands with $4,700.
No.
What we're doing is we're taking that off of our current financial statement and turning it over to collections so that we don't have to keep carrying this. I've had questions in the past, so you guys just walk away from that money?
No.
No,
we do not.
Okay. Need a motion and second, Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Action item F, C&G Ice Cream.
Okay, so on July 13th, we received a letter from the owner of C&G Ice Cream Truck, Paul Davis, requesting a drive through the beachfront RV park. Currently, the port does not allow outside vendors without a lease or being a part of an event. Attached is his letter that he wrote for the board for your consideration. I left the motion blank for you guys to discuss and make that motion. Historically, we've never let anybody sell anything at the RV park, down to firewood, any little trinket, anything like that that's ever been proposed for sale, we've always declined it. Another thing that I would take into consideration is that we do have port businesses here that also sell ice cream. I did not ask for any of their inputs on anything like this that was happening. This would begin to set a precedent that might have some unforeseen consequences to it if we don't have something set up for, say, food trucks or vendors or a process for this to actually be done. Not that it can't ever happen, but currently we don't have any way, the port doesn't have any way to make this happen with our current agreement and what we historically do. It would be something new we would have to do. So that's what we're able to. That's where we are at, the port.
I don't feel we should change what we're doing because it would make it bad.
Yeah, everybody and their brother would want to drive through.
I mean,
and
it would just open up too many things. If we had a designated area that we had here at the port for, you know, people to have a business there, it would be one thing, but we do not have that. And we can't have vendors going through the RV park selling their wares.
I have a question. I wasn't here in the past. I don't know. There's a coffee shop down there. A little coffee shop.
Is that
part of the harbor?
They've got a permit from us.
Pardon me?
They have a permit.
They rent a space.
Rent a space. And that's part of this coffee shop right here.
They actually have a lease agreement with the port to be there.
It's separate from the coffee shop.
Right.
It's separate from the coffee shop.
Well,
this reminds you, this letter's not asking for a spot. This is asking to be just kind of a mobile drive-through type situation that is definitely outside of having a lease agreement for a stationary unit.
So if he wanted to rent a spot down there and sell his ice cream, he could?
That would be a different ask and a different question and a different conversation. So.
There are some things about that issue, particularly of food vending, that I don't think we're ready to answer yet because I don't think we've done a deep dive into what's required as far as, you know, do we have to provide water? Do we have to provide sewer? What kind of power hookups are necessary? Those kind of things. Now, this guy isn't going to take all that, obviously, but others will. I like the ice cream, yeah. when that little bell goes off, my knees get weak. But I'm prepared to make a motion if it's okay, folks.
Please.
Okay, I move that we deny the request from the ice cream man, and further that we begin developing a lease agreement geared toward food vending. No deadline on it. Be ready for next year, maybe, and so that'll give us the time to look at what's required to do, and then we can kind of talk about how we would go about doing that, because there may be potential for those kind of things down there.
Plus, we need to designate an area. We have to figure an area to actually do this.
Well, we need to first of all find out what we have,
we
have to provide, what the requirements are, and then see what we have that fits that.
Okay.
The coffee thing is a little unique because it doesn't take a lot. But
and it was very unique in the fact that it was a very difficult RV parking spot that allowed for an unusual exception to being able to fill that spot and keep the revenue generated from that spot.
Well, part of the reason that I'm thinking about this is just recently I went to the Wetlands Tap House in Lapine, which is a food truck park, among other things. And there are sewer, water, and big power hookups to every one of those facilities. Plus, they have vents. And I'm sure all that's covered somewhere under somebody's code. So that would be important for us to be able to capture that in a lease agreement, that they'd have to be equipped this way. So.
Comment that I've got to that, Richard, would be, seeing how he's a mobile truck, what responsibilities would the port have? Because he's mobile, because he not only goes through here, I've seen him up by the swimming pool and others.
Well, I'm suggesting that he may not have the same one, but in the same lease agreement, we may contemplate the ice cream man. I don't know anybody else that does that, but to make sure that whatever we should require. I don't know enough about it to know. But anyway, that my point of all of this is, rather than reacting to individual applications, we ought to try and get ahead of it and say, let's develop something for when the time comes that somebody wants to do that. And we've already discussed when we improved that RV park down there, built a new one, that we may consider a food truck site. So this would be a time to give us some opportunity to research this and look at the, without, you know, the press of having to get it done by next month, and just give us a chance. So.
The only question I have is, can a coffee place sell ice cream? Can they sell sandwiches? Can it, was it restricted just to coffee? As far as the lease is concerned.
There's a motion on the table.
I know, I'm trying to get separated.
I'm not, if they have a
motion, then the food truck, should it be two things?
As far as if they can sell sandwich, I don't know. I, and specifically to.
You have to have fire suppression systems for food trucks. You have to have certain, electrical for food trucks. It's a big difference than a coffee and ice cream.
Okay, well, I'll go back to the motion. My motion is that we deny the application for the ice cream.
Amen.
Okay.
And,
well, that's the motion.
Second that motion.
Okay. We have a motion and second, Danielle.
Larry?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Now, follow-up to that is then that we would request staff to go ahead and start looking into this. Like I said, I'm not in a hurry to have this done, but it would be nice to get kind of lead into it and see. We may find out that, you know, we really don't even want to get into this business, that there's a lot of stuff that's required, but at least that will give us some lead in time.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Item G. Oh, this is a big one, the strategic business plan update.
Okay, so this is not a extreme major overhaul of our strategic business plan. This is just kind of updating our capital facility plans, our project opportunities, kind of what we're envisioning our action plan to be, and we reworked the map with locations, some things being done, adding some other things of future projects, and different potentials for different areas throughout the port. So let's just take a second and go through all of this. Table 14, the capital improvement plan. This, we redid, this is the one we updated not too long ago for the University of Oregon project plans that they had. We have changed them again. It's on here. So is there any questions or comments about the capital improvement plan and the kind of the order that we have these in? They are listed by priority or current funding that we have. Nobody has anything?
I have a question. They have a comment. Just, you know, again, for the record, to make sure it's clear. So these strategic business plans are required. They're required to be updated every 5 years. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, I think they're intended to be a living document and not just something that's set in stone. So what you've done is realistic readjustment of priorities based on, as you said, funding opportunities and other opportunities. So I think it's very appropriate to just review these periodically and then look at reality and say, well, we're not going to be able to do this, but now we can do this because of whatever.
Yes.
So it's not like we're kind of being indecisive. It's more like we're trying to focus more intently on what's realistic for us to accomplish within this 5-year window. I think these are marvelous, because if somebody came in here just foul oil, said, what do you guys do? What are you going to do? And we're fine. So there it is. That's what we're laying out, that's what we've got intended to do, and that's our vision for how we're going to do it.
The next phase, the project opportunities, very similar to capital improvement plan, and then the action plan. I do have previously, the kite field was moved down, was farther down the list, and I have now kind of moved it up. That's probably the biggest change that we kind of adjusted that and looked at, and the reason being that the recreational opportunities and the funding and the money that can be made from generated from RV parks and the recreational activities is a lot. We're in the middle of a stretch where recreational activities are a very popular thing, so I moved it up so we can talk about it, or when an opportunity comes up that we want to look at, that this is a project that, yes, we can get a loan for, similar to what we did for our RV park project. You can pay it back, and by opening these up and paying back the loan, there's still, by doing, if we did this project, it would generate more money almost immediately, even after paying the loan payment after that. So it's another source of revenue to add on to what we already are doing. So it's something that, no, we don't have funding for, but it might be something we want to talk about in the near future and see if that's a project that we want to try starting. More in particular, next budget cycle, you know, when we're looking at other projects or plans or the one after that. But it's a good revenue opportunity that if we pull the trigger on, it would benefit us quickly. The map that we went through, reworked a lot of things given updates that we've done through our FEMA project, our RV park project, hazard mitigation opportunities that we're looking at, along with the wastewater treatment plant. So I'm not going to go through every single one of these, but is there any questions, concerns with the map that we provided in the different areas? There's a lot of opportunity at the port for facility upgrades, improvements, public-private partnerships. There's a lot of different opportunities out there. Of course, as always, it comes down to funding.
Well, I recall when we took out the loan on the existing RV park improvements, one of the discussions we had about indebtedness was looking at that through the lens of, if we borrow this money, how are we going to pay it back? And so when we got into that discussion, the payback from an RV park is pretty sure thing. And it's going to be almost a guaranteed return on your investment. Other things we might have to do, you know, just wool gather and say, and somebody comes in and says, you guys got to do this. And we'd have to go borrow money for that. I see those as a little different issue depending on how that works. But I think elevating the RV park makes sense. But also recall discussions that go back clear to when I first got on this commission. We were talking about maximizing port assets. And that discussion generated from talking about the port as being a working port, where we didn't want to go California on us and sell the assets away to build condos and those kind of things. We wanted to make sure that we kept this a working port for the benefit of the community. But we also said we should be looking at opportunities to maximize the public's return on their investment here by looking at things like expanding RV parks or putting in, you know, an office building or trailer storage or some of those kind of things, or we would have a pretty sure return that would improve the financial position of the port and also improve our value over time. So that, I think, is all the more reason to keep examining these things and looking at saying, okay, well, maybe we can move this. I think that all makes sense. That's why I really like this strategic business plan, because that's what we're talking about, is being strategic about making business decisions. And I like that. I think it's appropriate that we keep turning the crank. Sorry, that was a little long-winded. That's me.
Our next major update for this will be due up in 2025. So these strategic business plans are expensive. So we will be budgeting for that next year and finding a consultant or group to rework this. And it's always really nice to see what a new plan looks like because it's all your updated information. It's as new as possible. There is still stuff in this document that, you know, things that haven't been, the bar crossings and things like that. They take all those things into account and put it into a nice package of what the recreational impacts are, commercial impacts. And but unless you pay that sum of money, you don't get those answers. So right now this is this update, but we'll be looking at another one in 2025-ish.
You know, I always thought it was unfortunate that the universities aren't involved in this. This would be a great opportunity to contract with Oregon State or University of Oregon and say, okay, we need a strategic business plan written for us. Here's all the stuff we've got. Send kids down here to interview us and write it, and we'll pay you to do it. It would be great. But so, okay. That brings us to Commissioner's action.
Motion to approve Strategic Business Plan 2023 Annual Review and Update Tables 14, 15, 17, and Project Opportunities Map.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay. Action item H, McLennan contract for FEMA sediment storage.
Okay, so there is the top one says revised bids for small construction projects. We revised the total procurement amounts. All came in over $100,000 procurement for construction projects. Anything over $100,000 requires a formal bid opening. So we went back to the contractors and had them reduce the scope of work to come in under $100,000. So the original procured amount for what we were asking for was $111,000 from McLennan. We reduced some of the rock and how high it went and got it down to $99,725 is the contracted amount.
The changes still keep everything functional.
Yep.
Okay. Questions, comments? Okay. Action.
I make a motion to approve contract for McKillen Excavation Inc. to perform sediment storage construction for dewatering in the amount of $99,000. Am I wrong?
No, you're right.
I just wanted to make sure you had it. It didn't say not. Go ahead.
$99,725.00.
Second. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Action item I.
Okay.
Project PW189 purchase of grid.
So I know we've already went over this once, but staff, myself and staff decided to go an extra step farther and solicit the dredge equipment on Oregon Bias. It's a web-based thing that obviously is accessible for anybody to look at. We did get a couple other Ellicott dredge. There's another place out of Florida that asked for other, more information. However, they didn't give us a quote. So kind of refines our look, what we were doing, and honestly makes me feel a little more comfortable going to FEMA saying that everybody's had a chance to look at this. So I'm asking for your approval again. There is a confirmed dollar amount attached with it. Once we get approval for this, then we'll be able to continue on with the purchase.
And again, this is an outlay of a lot of money that is reimbursable.
Yep. The other dredges that there was, it kind of goes hand in hand with what Jack stated, what all of our research has, there's, you know, there is other dredges out there, but specifically to what we're trying to do, the operation that we're trying to run, the other dredges are much larger, more maintenance, more overhead altogether, and quite frankly, will outpump what we can keep up with. So it was nice to see what other people had, but we're still confident in the low bidder in this and the equipment that we're asking them to use.
And with this purchase, this will position us uniquely as being one of a few, if not the only port in the state that has its own dredge.
That has its own dredge, yes.
Because there is the other dredge.
There's the state dredge that Charleston, Port of Coos Bay, currently operates for the state.
Is that the one that was here for the tsunami?
Yes. Sinkhole.
Oh,
sinkhole. Okay. All right. Comment?
I think they researched it well. And
well, this is...
this is great.
We're waiting for as long as we have for action on this whole issue. We're now, this is our second affirmative step after the tractor of moving forward, plus McLennan's contract and purchasing this dredge. So what we've been talking about for all these many years is finally starting.
Yes.
So that's important.
Yes, and so with this dredge, it's about 14 to 16 weeks out before it can come. Mm-hmm. We are going to be talking with them and see if we can work the delivery and the training that comes with it after the new year. Because it'll, with reimbursement, when it'll get here, it'll land somewhere close to Christmas and the middle of December. And so that's when we're shooting for it to be here.
So after, if it gets here, let's say New Year's, how much work period do you have left? In water work period do you have left?
Till March 15th.
Okay, so there is some time to get it going.
Our goal is still to start dredging shortly after January and start on this project and start doing it. That's our, still our goal.
And hope we don't run into too many shopping carts and whatever else.
So Travis, how long do you think it'll take you guys to put that holding area together?
I'm hoping that in end of October.
Okay.
The major hold, we need to wait for McLennan to do his work, and then we're currently lining up a archaeologist to be here because any digging that's done over there has to be monitored by them. So right now we're trying to, and they're also going to have to be on site for when McLennan's doing his source, where any type of excavation will require them. So we're
okay.
In the process of doing that. So
okay.
So that's native soil there, that's not
yep.
Filled?
It is, yes. Yes, and we are very, we're right on the line. Part of our project is, part of our project isn't. And playing fair and, you know, making sure everybody knows it's a very cooperative agreement that we have that would keep them included. So, so they have somebody on site for verification.
Okay.
Some page, but we do.
FEMA. We will, but it will be reimbursable by FEMA.
Okay. Further?
I make a motion to approve the port manager to purchase a DRP 120 with listed options for FEMA project PW 189, dredging in the amount of $415,810.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Billiter Marine Contract.
Okay, Billiter Marine Contract is very similar to McLennan. Matter of fact, I think their prices of the two different jobs were only a couple hundred dollars apart, but regardless, still over $100,000, so we reduced the total cubic yardage to remove to be about 2,600 cubic yards. under their contract, which brings the total down to $99,982.53. This is still going to get out the heavier rock material. The remaining material that we weren't able to do under this will be removed with our dredge and our dredging scope of work. So we're still getting the same amount of work. We're just paying a company a little less.
Good. And if Billiter accidentally dropped that clamshell and took a little more, it wouldn't hurt our feelings, right?
Nope. I'm not counting buckets. Well, I am counting buckets, but I'm not counting over the buckets.
And this, well, we'll talk about that for a minute. Yeah. Okay. Any questions? Discussion?
And just so everybody knows, Port Council has reviewed these contracts, have provided the contracts, and that's what we're using as their comp template for FEMA work.
Thank you.
Okay.
Motion to approve contract for Billet Marine to perform clamshell dredging at boat yard area and boat yard area and contract not to exceed
982.53. Okay, motion and second.
I seconded.
Larry?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes.
Information item A, FEMA dredging update.
So in here, there's quite a bit of information regarding FEMA expenditures that we have been doing, equipment that we have purchased. We have purchased a tractor. We have purchased 170 concrete blocks for the sediment storage basin, 3,500 feet of 8-inch HDPE pipe. With fittings, bolts, and training that comes with it for welding the pipe together. The generator for running the DRP-120, 200 kW, a 20-foot flatbed trailer to haul our equipment and materials with, and 300 feet of turbidity screen. Equipment to be purchased, the dredge, the equipment storage building, sediment storage fencing, and fabric for sediment storage walls. Contracts would be for McLennan and for Billiter for two separate parts of work for the bank and for clamshelling. Attached is kind of our pay schedule. This might hurt your head a little bit when you look at it. It does. I would say basically you're focusing more towards the bottom line, the capital project running total. You'll see we start with $666,083. We end with $666,083. And everything in between, if we hit negative, that means we spent more money than we have. So you'll see there's no negatives, but it does show where our cash flow with our reimbursements and it taking time to come back. And that's why these equipment purchases are spread out over time, because we're waiting for those reimbursements to come in before we can continue purchasing. Also attached with it, I have laid out basin one and basin two, kind of the pipe layout that there will be, how we plan on running the pipe, where the breaks will be. I think also in here, yeah, and the next page after that, so the red areas obviously are the areas that we plan on removing material, and then attached with that is our estimated time, how long we'll be in each one of these areas, and how much we have to remove from these areas. All the procurements, that's why this is so long, all the procurements for the pipe, so everything I just listed before. The pipe, the generator, the flatbed trailer, and the turbidity screen. Those are all added here with it. So reimbursements, we did just get a reimbursement back from prior to any of the dredging equipment. So we are getting our reimbursements. They are taking about a little over 100 days, though, for us to get them back. So we've yet to see one within 90 days.
And that's probably just an electronic transfer. You don't even get the luxury of having a check?
No. Don't even get to count it.
You just get a magic number that appears.
I would like the idea of taking that check down to the bank and put that in my account. It's $400.
I print it in Spinaker.
Is there any questions? It is a lot of purchasing, a lot of stuff going out. So,
impact to staff. Obviously, you're going to have to take one or two people. They're going to do all the dredging. What's the impact going to be to their workload of what they normally would be doing?
It's going to get spread out, and everybody's going to get spread a little bit thinner. And you know, one of the good things that's always happened with our NWR work period, with it happening in the winter, is that we do slow down in the winter. You know, do we ever run out of work? No. But you'll notice it's kind of how we laid it out in our budget, that our expenditures towards maintenance and repairs are lower because we won't be able to be getting to all those other things that we usually typically spend money on during the winter. That's why our budget isn't as high, because we will be focusing on those areas.
Yeah, like mowing and stuff like that.
It's not, and you know, I have been laying out a plan, but just by reducing our projects, our infrastructure projects here, we will have enough time.
This might be crazy for you guys, but what is a turbidity screen?
It's the, it's got floats on top. It's large or yellow. There are multiple different questions, and it's called a turbidity curtain, is what it actually is. And it's a wall that lays all the way down to the floor, so when you have turbidity in the water, turbid water is dirt, and it turns it muddy and stuff.
Oh.
It contains it and makes it fall straight down and contains it to the area so it's not spreading out. Sorry, April. So it doesn't spread throughout the area.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, it's a requirement for almost all dredging.
Okay. I didn't hear that before.
I just got a question. We got $43,000 on an equipment storage building. What is that all about?
It's something we haven't purchased it yet, but we are looking at one to house this dredge in, keep the dredge in, the equipment under it, our generator under it. It's a big top shelter is what it is. It's a canvas type top. I know that Toledo has a couple of them. That's kind of where we got the idea. The Port of Toledo has them in. The dredge comes with 40-foot Connex boxes on there, so our goal is to kind of match that to fit that this top will go on top of those Connex boxes to create storage and an area for the material and dredging stuff to go.
Where is that going to be located?
More than likely in the boatyard.
Yeah.
It's where we're going to try and keep all that. The travel lift is what has to put the dredge in and out of the water. So we are looking at this as an opportunity to get a covered shelter out there to take care of the equipment.
And isn't that reimbursable?
Yep.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And it's always a good thing to think about how you're going to take care of the stuff that we're buying.
Yeah.
We're talking a five-year project that going to be out there for a long time, and keeping this equipment undercover, giving us a place to work on this stuff and house it will be important for the future of it.
Mm-hmm. Just looking at your proposed dredging map, Travis, that you got there.
Mm-hmm.
The red areas, I take it, is what you're going to dredge, or the areas you plan on dredging.
They're the areas with the most of the sediment accumulation that we have, yeah.
Have you looked further out towards the end of those docks?
Towards the end of?
And you know, I'm talking about, I haven't walked the dock over here in Basin 1, but I'm talking about in Basin 2 or the commercial basin. Because the reason I ask is because last year, during the low tides, there was less than 6 feet of water in my boat. Same area as I was last year, and there was a when I seen that, I walked down and I looked at the end, and if it wasn't for the Dynamic or the Equinox or the other big boats, there wouldn't be a channel for anybody to drive through either, because those big boats have kept that ordered out. So are you going to plan on pushing it? Can we, with our permit that you have drawn or are about to get, hopefully, if we haven't got it, push that further out to drag that area out there?
Yes, we can.
Okay.
If we see problem areas that are outside the scope, our scope of work is to remove 38,000 cubic yards from Basin 1 and Basin 2. That these areas are areas where we have our bathymetric survey. When this was done, this was the highly impacted areas. And don't get me wrong, throughout our port, this is 38,000. We have well over 100,000 more yards in our port that has to come out, or needs to come out. So beyond this scope of work, and that's kind of how obviously our main goal is to get these areas done kind of first. We have to go a little bit farther, we can. But then after our project's over, we'll be able to definitely look at expanding on where we dredge.
So along with that, Basin 2 west wall has got the biggest problem with erosion. Are we going to riprap that beforehand, or is that hopefully it don't slide after we dredge along that bank?
We strategically dredge to make sure that we don't make it worse than what it is. It needs to be fixed, but since we can't afford to fix it, you make it toward your docks will float. And then you taper it out from there. So you create a slope until that is fixed. Is there any other questions?
Okay,
comments? The pipe, I'm gonna just say it one more. The pipe, the way we have this laid out, and it is a little, we do have quite a bit of pipe coming to what it is, but the way we have this laid out, we should not be interfering with running a pipe through one of our channels going through. Our goal is to just come off the bank and be able to go out so we don't have pipes blocking boats or obstructions going across the channel, because when we've done it before, it was an issue.
We're not going to repeat the tsunami, right?
No. We learned lots, and we're not going down some of those roads again.
Because some of us got locked out.
You get locked out. And don't get me wrong, when we're dredging in some of these areas, we will be contacting the boat owners,
perfect,
giving you a chance to be able to move your boat. There still will be cables and pipes, but it'll be much easier for us to work with you to get your boats in and out.
Notice is very helpful.
Okay, let's move to information item B, the wastewater treatment plant matching fund.
Okay, we've been waiting for their answer. EPA's answer on a cost share waiver for quite some time. After waiting, I received this letter yesterday. We did not get the cost share waiver for the plant. Attached is the letter. Denial letter and reason why basically hinges on the fact that it is not accessible for the rest of the community to use by it, which is understandable, and that's not the way their community grants work. If the community is not going to be shouldering the cost of higher rates due to the entity providing the matching funds, it kind of takes everything we have out for qualifying for it. So we are back to seeking the matching funds for the wastewater treatment plant. I have already reached out to Pacific Seafood. Dan, who was here at one of our meetings, I reached out to him to start having the conversation about options, what we have, what we're going to be looking at. He did continue to say that they are committed to working with us to make this happen.
Yes.
So the plan of attack for when we're going to talk about this next is that the scope of work that when we included the part of the receiving dock to be fixed where the Pacific Seafood, that included in-water work, replacing pilings out there. the review process for in-water work through the EPA will take almost a year. It will take quite some time. So I had Jack out here. We looked at different options. We are now remodifying our scope of work to eliminate in-water work. I think we can still fix the same thing by not going that route. Planning for phase two funding, the new cost estimate, the scope of work for phase two funding, we have our phase one funding, which we're working off right now for planning and engineering. This is getting our pencil sharpened on the plant, its location, cost estimates. Once we have those things down in the budget put together, we'll know closer to what our number of our project amount will be, and send that to Pacific Seafood so they have an idea of what it is too, and let them digest it. And my suggestion is that we start working very closely with Pacific Seafood to make sure the plant and everything that we have laid out is something they concur with, something that they are confident in running, definitely start, come up with a number of what we're looking at and ask for, basically we're going to be asking for help. We're going to have to discuss options. I mean, there are options, but we're going to have to see what that number is and see what we want to do. If we're going to contribute any of our current money that we have set aside for it, if we're going to a portion of it, none of it, a loan, these are all things that we're going to have to decide what we want, what we envision, and then talk with Pacific Seafood and see if there's a path forward. I definitely think there's a path forward with it. But before phase two and the funding that we're talking about are all things that come with a pretty hefty price tag. So before we can even start moving forward or making any of those other bigger calls, and like I said, the permit application and the annual fee was my last thing that I wanted to spend money on before we had some of these, this answer and some of these things figured out. So it's something to think about, different options, what you guys think. I'm definitely always here, always open to any suggestions that we might want to put into this, but the end result is that the $875,000 for the total project matching fund is going to be on us to work out.
And this is why I'm very disappointed in the Oregon Seafood Processors Association. I've asked them four times for support because I wanted them to emphasize that this was a community asset and that would expand the opportunities for the port to have other users come in, which in my view would have qualified us for what that letter said. But they failed to take any action, and so we're now where we are. But for what it's worth, that's just on the record. This is what I was worried, partly, that we were going to end up with, is a sole source use. Okay, before we go to executive session, since I imagine most everybody will leave, I'd like to move commissioner's comments up because I talked today to OVFW about the bubble season, the October fishery, and they have elected to not support that and asked their commission to not support the bubble. The rationale being that the estimated return from the CHETCO is going to be 5,600 fish after in-river fishing, which is well above the desired status level. The Windchuck, on the other hand, is going to be 348 fish, which is well below conservation status. So that prompted them to not recommend that season. That will be a revenue hit for the port. Be a revenue hit for the community because that's the only opportunity we have to go salmon fishing commercially. So there are some other issues that entered into some of that decision. I don't know if you are aware, but the state of Oregon has entered into several agreements with tribes to where they are not co-managers, but they are partners. with ODFW and management. One of the issues was if we have this season, what will be the tribal ask? So, at any rate, we're now the commission can reverse that. The commission can say, yeah, we're going to have those seasons, but it's unlikely with staff recommendations against them. They are recommending an Elk River commercial bubble, however, for those that are willing to go up there. So I just thought I'd mention that. It's kind of disappointing, particularly in view of the fact that we anticipated at least 1,200 fish being freed up with no California commercial season down south. That would have reduced, or would have increased the number of returning fish by about 1,200 based on the math. So just thought I'd throw that wet blanket out there before we go home.
So, Richard, isn't it September the 15th that the decision will be final?
That's when the commission will meet. But this was, well, this is a big deal. Because the staff comes in and recommends it. Now, they will lay out their full rationale in the package so you can see what all the discussions, the numbers, and all that. But that was the, that's the decision that they have made.
Yeah, it sounds pretty damaging for everybody all around. Did the commission of Brookings Harbor protest this, or at least wrote something, an official letter, letting them know that,
well,
don't let this happen?
We didn't find out until today. The last time I inquired, they said, well, it's in the air.
Okay. So would it be wise that a letter would be written for?
We haven't in the past done that.
You haven't, or you have?
We have not. We have not. I have mixed feelings about that. Mixed feelings have more to do with the tribal piece than anything. So till we, I would like to see what, how they're going to handle that. Because this came up on the ocean fishery this year. The Coquille tribe asked for a piece of ocean fish, which they've never had. And the issue is that the people who are affected by the boat decision, which was the 50-50 share plan, those are treaty tribes. Most of Oregon's tribes are not that sort of treaty tribe. The treaty tribes that we deal with are the four Columbia River tribes, the Washington Puget Sound tribes, there's the Macaw and the Quileutes on the outside, and the Klamath. Those are the federally recognized treaty tribes that are affected by BOLT. So until the state works out what this partnership looks like, I don't quite know what to do.
Real quick, how did it, and this is, never mind, I'll save it for later.
Okay.
It's a question, it's going in depth, but never mind.
So, any other commissioners comments? Anybody got any good news? All right, with that, we are going to adjourn the regular meeting and go into an executive session. So, this executive session is a Port of Brookings Harbor Board of Directors is called pursuant to ORS 192.660 sub 2 sub I. To review and evaluate the employment-related performance of the chief executive officer of any body, a public officer, employee, or staff member who does not request an open hearing. Any member of the media that is here may remain, however, the board will require that any information derived from this meeting may not be disclosed pursuant to ORS 192-660 sub 4.
Goodbye.
Bye.
I appreciate that, but I downloaded it on my phone.
Aww.